Did you get to know David Sykes through his work? Thank you for his book. That'd be a great thing. Learned in the throne now that she passed away recently, just suddenly. So, Cheryl, if you get this tape, it's in memory of your husband David. It's my mother. Okay, so, what Dr. Sykes does, and he does it so cleverly and so ingeniously, is that he shows the trends that one author is thinking of another book while writing this. That the author of Rus is thinking about Parshas Vayeshev. He's trying to put in as much as possible through the cracks of the words in Parshas Vayeshev into the Rus story. So some examples are quite obvious. Parshas Megillas Rus mentions Peretz and Zerah. It mentions Tamar and Yehuda. Right? It has a story of a type of levirate marriage to perpetuate the name of a person who died without children. Now, while it's true that neither in the Torah story nor in the Rus story is the levirate marriage actually performed to the Torah principles of the brother doing it. Right? In the Torah, it's the father-in-law doing it, and in Rus, it's a cousin doing it. Right? But so there are some very obvious connections between Parshas Vayeshev and Megillas Rus. This is something that actually we're doing on the very end of this semester, but I just want to point out this because in Dr. Sykes' treatment of King David, which you read, this comes up. Okay? But there are some even more subtle connections to Parshas Vayeshev, which are really quite amazing. Parshas Vayeshev and Rus share an incredible coincidence when, in the final analysis, but in a more less comprehensive analysis, when you start reading, if your antenna are up, you recognize, hey, wait a second, every single pasuk is starting with the letter Vav. Did you ever notice? No other book does this. Mamish. Right? Except in both Parshas Vayeshev and Rus, in both, eight psukim don't begin with the letter Vav. Could that be coincidence? There's no other parsha in the Torah with this kind of incidence of Vav Psukim. Only one parsha comes close, and it's Vayetze. But, you see, this is where Dr. Sykes excels. Can you remember what is Boaz's, Pliny Almoni's excuse for not marrying Rus? What does he say? I can't do this!
He doesn't want all the land.
What's his Hebrew expression? What's the expression in the text? I cannot do this. I cannot marry her because if I would marry her, his expression is Hen Ashkis Es Nachalasi. What he means ought to be obvious, right? What he means should be obvious. If I marry her, she's Moabite, I'll destroy my future. Right? Okay. By the time that Yehuda tries to get his son, Onan, to marry his brother Er's widow, her name is Tamar, Bereshis is in big trouble. What's the main trouble of Bereshis? Yes, there's ruthlessness, there's exile, there's infertility, there is no hint at 200 plus years of a great nation emerging, right? But the biggest problem with Sefer Bereishis is obviously brothers can't get along. Right? Starting with Cain and Abel. But how can you be a great nation if you're not even a great family? Right? Two brothers try to save Yosef. One that just makes up an excuse and put him in the pit, and I'll come back later together. He's too weak to stand up to his brothers. The other one says, he's our brother. Let not our hand be on him. Let's sell him. Judah basically spares him, and he's more convincing. Right? When Yehuda tells his son Onan to marry his dead brother's widow, right? He says twice in the pasuk, "Take your brother, he's your brother, perpetuate the name of your brother." Now the punishment for refusing to do so—it's called chalitza. Okay, maybe you shame him. You say, "Oh, this is what we say to a man who refuses to pray." But God kills him. God takes his life. That's a pretty harsh punishment, right? What can you articulate in Hebrew what he does? It says Vatishofes Zaro Arzo, after marrying Tamar. He fears the Zera won't be mine. She's gonna be thinking of her first husband every time she calls this baby's name, right? Now that is often a concern of a second husband, isn't it? If it wasn't after a divorce, but after a loss, right? So, okay, you have to put that in the cheshbon if you have another child and you name him after the first husband. But there is one person on earth who ought to be okay with that, the dead person's brother, hence the mitzvah, right? So without knowing the future mitzvah, apparently it was some kind of an inyan, right? Because why did Yehuda even think of doing this, of telling him to do this? This is an unusual word to use for him, for what he did. I would have expected a word like this, Batishpoch Zaro Arza, maybe Batipol Zaro Arza. Yes, what do you think?
So in Dr. Lee, we review like the Ramban on this, and it's Ramban has the idea that it's a Gilgal. So he's literally killing the potential for his brother to come back, for his soul to be born.
And that explains the incredible punishment here. Not punishment later in the Torah, but yes, the Ramban here talks about a great secret as well as in Parshas, as well as in Parshas Kisetse. Which he discusses in Eov. I hope he gave him some Eov, took him to look up too, right? His Ramban on Eov and the Kisvei HaRamban. You won't get the full scope of the Vayesha Pasuk or the Kisvei Pasuk unless you're looking in Eov. I believe it's Perek Lamed Ches.
Oh.
I believe he's
worth it. It's a bit of a non sequitur, but for Yibam, it's like if it's a Gilgal of the person, then when Onin also dies, does that mean that the baby that Yehuda had, is that still his heir? Like, named for heir, is it also named for Onin?
Yeah, I'm not a Bucky and Gilgal, but, if not for Ramban, Gilgal probably would have been forgotten. Yeah, the Gemara never mentions it. It's in the Zohar on every other page, but Ramban really revived Gilgal. Ramban never mentions it. So we're showing them the same. If you don't believe in Gilgal, you're a kofar. Some say if you do believe in Gilgal, you're a kofar. What are you going to say? But I'll just say it's.
Or just, I guess, which name is. Like, if the second person who's supposed to be Yibam dies, do you all of a sudden.
So, but that's. It's, you know, this pasuk. The Hanya
before share to me the spoon of shame or feel amazed.
Right. Now see what this is talking about, right? The parasha of Yibam. Anybody, right? Okay. So there is no imperative on this pasuk in Yibam Asdach Chavdalid to name the child after the dead person, because we don't pass them. Okay, we don't see that Boaz and Ruth's child is named Mahlon. This child is not named Aaron or Orlin. Okay, in fact, you had a chance to name them both Aaron and Orlin, because they're twins.
Oh.
Two boys died, two boys are born. Right? In Rus, you don't need two boys to replace because Orpah didn't return, so she,
right.
So is not remembered. Okay? But this is understood idiomatically in the Gemara. Okay? Because this word is problematic. The child that is born shall be named after his uncle, not his brother. This baby's uncle is the one who died, not his brother.
Oh, that's why this is Gilgal. It's saying he brought
that. So the Gemara in Yevamos and the Prophet makes a drop that this pasuk actually does not teach that you name a child after the dead uncle in Yevamos. This pasuk teaches that the one who gets the first dibs at doing Yevamos is the oldest brother of the family. You get it? Before our share, Hilev here means the mother of this unfortunate man who died and the brother who might be Yibam. The Bechor that woman gave birth to shall come up al shame. Here is idiomatic, which means instead of or in the place of. Now Achiv is literal. You see, the Kum al shame in the place of his dead brother by marrying his sister-in-law. This is not talking about the new baby that's the result of this new Yibam. It's talking about the choice of who gets to do Yibam. When the Gemara makes this statement, and the Chavdalah and the Sefer Yibam, the Gemara's response is, what? Ein bikroi yotzei midei pshuto. Right? One of only three times in the whole Shas where the Gemara thought to ask that question. How can you think that this is what the Pasuk is saying? Ein bikroi yotzei midei pshuto. It's talking about a baby being born in vain. None. Right? Anyway, but don't you see, this is the kind of stuff that David Sykes excels at. That Rus purposely writes this word. Regardless of what Pliny Mami actually said, Shmuel HaNavi is the one writing the book, many years later. And he purposely uses a word that plugs into this. You see? Because Rus and Rus becomes pretty harsh with people on this. Because in Rus, this is really a, you hear of a Medrash that says that the whole purpose of Rus is to teach the power of Chesed. There are three people in Megillas Rus who do just what's expected of them. Who are they? Just what everybody else would be expected to do. They are?
Orpah.
Moni. And the Na'ar, who introduces Ruth to Boaz in a quite a disparaging way. He sort of dismisses her as a Moabite. Who does negative chesed in this book? You're thinking of Ailey's children, but So I think I don't want to blame Naomi for leaving. She had no choice but to leave. What was she going to do? Tell her husband, "You go with the boys, and I'll stay behind." Boys are guilty because they stayed there for so long after their father died.
So,
would
Naomi be in a being on
the plus side? No, I put her in the plus. I put her in the plus because she returned. It's such a beautiful story of reciprocation. There's so many indications in this book that Naomi wants Boaz, and she can get him. And she arranges for Ruth to have him. In other words, you chose your mother-in-law, your mother. I'm going to choose someone for you over what I think would be for you. Okay? Now, I understand from Boaz's standpoint, he probably would prefer Ruth to Naomi. But Boaz, it seems from the story, is up for grabs. And where did the Midrash get this? Is that in the Masorah, every time it says that Naomi tells Ruth to do something, it says, V'yoradit hagoren v'rachatzt v'sacht v'sam. You see, do you remember, does it ring a bell how the Masorah spells those words? They're spelled with yuds. You don't read it with the yud. So it's kriy ksiv. You all know what that is, right? Spelled one way, pronounced another. So that yud is an indication to the Midrash that really Naomi wants the man to get him. But so you know she engages in chesed. Chesed is doing more than expected. Okay. Then surely Naomi wants these girls to go with her. It's a very dangerous trip from the Gaon of the Yarden, from Moab to Yericho, to wherever you're going in Pesach. Right? So, and yet she says, no, but it's good for me, but it's not good for you. Chesed means that you're not thinking in your own interests. So I would put here Naomi, Ruth for sure, and I would even put Boaz. You can say, big deal. So he helped her, he helped Ruth in the field. He helped, she was a beautiful woman, and he was interested in her right away. He still seems to go out of his way to help her. He's no gay of a dover, okay. I think he fell in love with her right away when he heard about what she did for her mother-in-law. I love teaching this to, like, young teenagers, to try to teach them what to fall in love with. Because we're getting such bad messages in modern culture about what to fall in love with. Right? Is that Boaz fell just as soon as he heard what, right? That's it. Chesed is everlasting. I mean, it's never going to change. Some of the other things that you might want to fall in love with will change. Okay, anyway, but the point I'm trying to make is just as this man dies for Vatisha Pes, Zara Orza, I'm not saying that Polyamoni dies in our story, but essentially he does because we don't name him. When he dies, he dies. But I'll say he has a name. His name is Tov. You go left, Tov, you go. Right? No one else is called Ploni Amoni in the Bible. There's one place called Makom Ploni Amoni in Malachi. But we basically, Megillas was killed him. Right? But not literally. You only die in Rus if you're Echesed. Negative message. You got it? Okay, this I submit to you. This is what Dr. Sachs does. He takes it one step further to show trends of David HaMelech that already start in this week's parsha. Okay. This doesn't appear in his book, but I remember having a conversation with him about this. Is that according to his work, it starts with Lot and his daughter, right? Predominantly Moab. It's not just Moab, because Shlomo, this is amazing. Shlomo had 700 wives, right? But between wives and concubines, 1,000. And the child who became the next king was the child of a non-Jewish woman. At least born non-Jewish. Naamah Amonis. The mother of the next king of all those children he must have had was an Ammonite. And by the way, that woman was, he married that woman before Basparo. You know how I know that? Because he married Basparo after becoming king. And Rechavam ben Naamah Amonis was 41 when he became king. And Shlomo only ruled for 40 years. That means Rechavam was born while David was still king. You hear this? You can, you know. The prophet was born, never mind when he married Naamah-Harmonius. Right? Must be Shlomo's first wife was an Ammonite, of all things. Maybe for David to justify his lineage from a Moabite. Right? Remember, when we learned Shmuel last year, we saw that when David killed Goliath, there was all this debate about how can I marry my daughter off to this man? His great grandmother was from Moab, right? Taco, good question. Question went around. David and Shaul refused to give over the daughter that was supposed to be married to David for killing Goliath. And then the people pressured him and said, listen, you made a deal. And he couldn't give that daughter over because he already gave that daughter to another man. And the people pressured him. And then Shaul made another deal. Kill 100 Plishtim. And David killed 200. He was hoping that he'll die. You know. Right? Why do we differentiate between males and females? Because the debate was apparently still raging. Why didn't they know? Why didn't they say? It was a man named Boaz who married her. What's the debate? The answer is, people didn't know that. What did I say about 10 minutes ago, wrote Ruth? Shmuel wrote Ruth, right? Shmuel obviously did not know the story very late in life. How do I know that? Because when he went over to David's house, he didn't know who David was. He certainly didn't know who his great-grandmother was. Right? So when Shmuel, who already crowned David king, sees that there is dissension about his lineage, he has to do the research. I have to let people know I can't have a king of Israel who's before people question his lineage. Yes?
So people, you know when David and Israel from Shaul and he goes to Shmuel and they have a conversation, does anyone think that has to do with Israel's lineage?
According to Chazal, the Gemara you're referring to is that they conferred about building the Beis Hamikdash.
Right, yeah.
Noyos. But the, it's in the Tanami. Why not? I'm not familiar with the Maimon Chazal that says it, but it's now your Maimon. Yeah. David has, do you have any pictures? Do you have any diaries? Do you have any story? Can you tell me something about her? You know. Yeah, my father told me. In fact, my grandfather told me about his mother. Mother wrote, yeah, I know some stories, let me tell you. Right? Okay, was she married to Machlon? Was she married to Philion? Maybe, why not? Okay. Also, Shmuel's a Navi, so he can, you know. Okay. But anyway, so he puts the story out there, right? But what about the rule of Lo Yavoa Momiyo Moavibi Kal Hashem? Because they didn't greet you with bread and water when you left. So Shmuel tells the story where Boaz seems to be engaging in some very unconventional halachic manipulation, which is, if Ammon and Moab were discounted, were disallowed because they refused to do chesed for us, right? Then it stands to reason that this woman, Rus, can join our Kehila and marry a Jew because she is the epitome of chesed. This gets into trouble. You mean, what about men from Ammon using chesed? No, men are permanently excluded because it's only men that we would assume would bring us bread and water in the desert. Not women. I'm going to articulate as follows. Don't punish the women of Moab and Ammon for not doing what we wouldn't expect them to do in the first place. So the women are totally excluded from this. Okay? This is the kind of stuff that precisely gets into. Okay? It talks about David Bathsheba and Yehuda and Tamar and Lot and his daughters. Look what schmutz goes through the line of Mashiach. Now, I would add, Dr. Sykes doesn't do this kind of stuff in his book, but I might add, just for you because you're scholars, is that notice the extreme contrast with Christianity, who requires their messianic personality to be so perfect as to not even be created by a man and a woman.
They have saints to be role models.
Amazing. This Dr. Sykes did mention, I hope you caught it. He mentioned the Gemara Yuma, Ein Ben David Ba Elim King Yesh Lo Kupa Shel Shrotzim Munach Mitzavara. Just have a can of worms or the bones in his closet. In other words, I don't want a Mashiach who's perfect. Only Mashiach who's perfect.
It's also interesting that he points out that that's why
Sha'ol. Of course, that's the same Gemara that was raised in Sefer Yuma. He thought of himself too innocent, too. To be beyond sin. Yes. Ben Shana Sha'ul B'Molchol. The Gemara says he was as innocent as a 1 year old. And then a 1 year old doesn't know how to do tshuva, doesn't know how to accept the responsibility. That was his undoing. Okay. So, I just have to tell you, I won't take more than 3 minutes on this, but this is a conversation I had with Nechama Leibowitz in her apartment. Just shortly before she passed away, I shared with her a Kiddushei HaRib, which is the first Gera Rebbe, on a Rashi in this week's Parsha. So it's a good Vartor you can say over the take of the Shabbos. Rashi says that the angels arrived in Sodom Lifnos Erev, in the evening. So why does the Torah have to tell me that? The question is not so much why did they wait till the afternoon to arrive. They were by Avram Tichon Mayom. Just snap your fingers, they get to Sodom. Right? The question is, why does the Torah care to tell us what time of day it was? Who cares? By Avraham, I need to know this Tichon Mayom for various parts of the discussion. But what's the Lifnos Erev? So it could be, you know, that they wanted to arrive at a time when not too many people are in the street. I don't know. Rashi says the following. Rashi says they purposely gave Avraham a chance to argue on behalf of the people of Sodom for the sake of Lot and his daughters. That's Rashi. It's gracious Rabbah, and it's okay. And had they just snapped their fingers and been in Sodom already, by the time Avraham is arguing on their behalf, that the city's already destroyed. So, this is what the Chiddush HaRim asks on Rashi. What's the point? Why do you want to save it? Because Lot's daughters, for the sake of Ammon and Moab, for the sake of Rus, for the sake of David, for the sake of Mashiach. So the angels answer, they push back, and they say, but God, it says in your Torah, Lo Yavo Ammoni and Moab Ibn Kal Hashem. Okay? So, think of the opening dialogue that the angels have when they come to Avram's tent. The very first thing they said was, Ayeh Sari Ishtecha, and Avram answered, Hinei Ba'olam. So based on the Gemara Yevamos of what's the nature of this, to let Avram know that his wife is so beautiful, she stays in it, what's it for? Ayeh Sari Ishtecha, Hinei Ba'olam. Kiddush HaRim says that this is a very important conversation. Because when the angels told God that what's the point of saving Lot for his daughters for the sake of Mashiach, when that nation, those two nations are not allowed to join our Kehillah. So God tells him what Boaz taught and what Shmuel taught, and we differentiate between men and women. And the angels said, why? You don't differentiate between men and women in Mamzer. You don't differentiate between men and women in Amalek. You don't differentiate between men and women in Edom and Mitzrayim and all these other nations. Why do we differentiate between men and women with respect to Ammon and Moab? So then God gave the answer I gave you before. Don't punish the women of Ammon and Moab for not doing what we wouldn't expect them to do in the first place, which is to go out and greet strangers with bread and water. Ayeh Sara Ishtecha. Why isn't she coming out with you to bring us bread and water? Maybe she's in the marketplace? No, no, she's Baal. You get it now? When I said this to the Hama, she got a smile on her face, like she was, and she started laughing hysterically. It was like I spent quite a long time in the apartment living in the present small circle, but she was like laughing hysterically. You get it? In other words, the angels were testing. It's Lo Vashamayim. God told the angels, you have to give Avram a chance to argue on their behalf, because of Lot and his daughters will create two nations who will be part of the line to Mashiach. But only if we differentiate between men and women. Why do we differentiate between men and women? Because it's not the way of women to go out and greet strangers with bread and water. How do you know? You can't just assume that. This crime hasn't happened yet. So what did they do? They went down to make a test. What was the test? We're going to stand in the distance and we're going to see who's coming out to greet us. Maybe Sarah's not coming out because she's in the market. No, we need Baal. Oh, let's go take a look.
And that's why we
marry
well.
That's why we differentiate between the man and the woman.
Yeah.
Because Sarah was in the tent. Okay, the whole thing was a test for the sake of Moshiach. Amazing. Okay, that's the stuff that David Sykes does. What it does is it takes from all different parts of the Tanakh, from the bookends of Tanakh, as the Medrash does. I take strong exception to Robert Alter for all of he's such a mechadesh chidushim about biblical narrative, when Chazal do all the same things. I don't think you read enough Midrashim. What Chazal do, comparing what Yaakov did to Esav with what Haman does to Mordechai, at quite a great length. It's ingenious. As good as anything Robert Alter comes up with. And David Sykes did what we did with Moshe in the three stories. Remember that? As like sort of a foreshadowing of things that would have happened in the future, and how Moshe he grows from helping, you know, his Jew against an Egyptian, the Jews, and getting involved with the two Gentile sides. The first time he doesn't say anything, the second time he does say something, right? This is Lamot Tekeriyacha. The third time, he obviously had dialogue with them because they told their father what had happened. Okay, so that's the steps. Okay, well, let's open up the Choveret. And I want to introduce you to an important concept in biblical narrative. Well, biblical parallelism. Biblical parallelism is a type of close reading. Thank you.
years. Mm-hmm.
Did he spray something on the board or that makes it worse?
Yes. Close reading is what we've been learning to do with our analysis of the first few chapters in Yoni Grossman's work, the Louis Mutzfan. Right? When Moshe puts his hand into his pocket the first time, it says, Vayotzi'ah. V'hinei Mitzaraz Kesheli. The second time it says, God tells him, now put your hand in your back in your pocket. It says, Vayotzi'ah Micheko. V'hinei Shava Kitzaro. How would you do this? Why the first time when he put his hand in it says Vayotzi'a, and the second time Vayotzi'a Mecheko? Why is the Torah being so didactic? Just use the same expression both times. Anyone want to come up with something? So it depends what kind of commentary you are. Yes.
Well,
what's the difference between the two? Torah is parses its words.
One's Kinyan, but one's specifically Kinyan of the Kohen.
Right. So Rashi is this is when we talked about the Nechama Leibu, it's the Mechanech, the Mechaneches. Rashi is a Mechanech. He wants to use extraneous verbiage to teach you things, to give you hope for a better time. Rashi lived in a terrible time for Jews, and the Midrashim he was using were written at a terrible time for Jews. Right? Third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, what an awful time. People writing works that we revere while fleeing for their lives. Right after mourning two grandchildren that were killed in the most recent pogrom. Crazy stories. Right? So Rashi is writing for people to not give up hope, have faith in the power of our learning. Right? On this, Rashi writes, take a look at the difference. Good things are more sure to happen than bad things. Because Vayotziyah is this. Vayotziyah Micheko is...
Are you getting it off?
Soon. Put on a jacket to show you, right? Vayotziyah, when it comes time for a flesh hand to be mitzaras, Vayotziyah, put your hand in your pocket now, Vayotziyah. His hand is dripping and it's dying away and it's falling apart. And I said, okay, now put your hand back in your pocket. Now, probably in Pshat, when he took it out the second time, he didn't take it out like this. He took it out. So he just took it out, Micheko, like that. The first time, he didn't know. Maybe I'll be holding a rabbit by its ears. Maybe I'll be holding a bouquet of flowers. Hashem wants to show him, I'm going to give you something to give you to show that you're I sent you.
It's like the first time you get your grade back, and if you don't do well, it's like the second time you get a grade back, and you like barely peek at the last page.
Good. Okay, so Vayotziyah, he didn't know what to expect the first time. Since Vayotziyah, he did this. So they think, oh, but that's not good for Rashi. Rashi wants to teach you something. Rashi wants to give you hope for something. So bad, from flesh to tzaras, that's 2.2 seconds. The good, 0.7 seconds. Okay, you see? All right. So that's known as close reading. Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble understanding how Rosh understands the difference. Is that he spent more time
on this happens sooner. You'll tell me Fiko.
The
Yotia doesn't happen until that's the Yotia. This is the Yotia Mifeko, faster. So the bad turning to good happens faster than the good turning to bad. Now, someone may say, but that's not true. It took me 4 years to earn my fortune. It took me 4 days to lose it. Right? It took me 2 years to lose 10 pounds. It took me 2 weeks to gain it. What's going on here? Rashi's wrong. Rashi's just giving them faith in the system, in an overall system. Just don't lose faith in it. Okay?
What
is this one? This is in Shmos Perek Dalet, beginning of Perek Dalet, Shmos. I'm going to give you 5 exercises right now. Listen to this. This will be examples of close reading. Ready? Okay? When you get it, just let me know, okay? Ready? We'll start with one. This is on number 9 in the Choberet. Where it says missing items. Okay. In Shmos Perek Gimel, Hashem tells Moshe, "V'shamu l'kolecha uvasta atav v'zipnei Yisrael el Melech Mitzrayim." And then Moshe has the chutzpah to say that he lo yaminu li. Hashem said, "V'shamu l'kolecha." What's with that? So what might you say? Yeah.
That it could be that they listen to
your voice,
but don't listen to
what you say. Ibn Ezra said that. Rashi seems to say, well, or at least Ramban, maybe. Ramban says that the Shemunu Kalecha is before Paro turns you down. In between, Paro is going to not release you so fast, maybe even make things worse. And then Moshe says, "Behein, hinei." At that point, lo yaminu li. They'll stop believing me. Okay, which is absolutely true. It's exactly what happened. So, what are the purpose of the 3 signs that God gives him? Hand, leprosy, hand. Blood. Stick, snake, stick. Water, blood, water. It's A turning to B back to A. Moshe, don't you realize you were raised with kings? You became a shepherd for 60 years. You're very humble now. I get it. But you can talk to kings again. When you're Ramban, the 3 signs are not like Rashi punishing signs. They're not punishments. Rashi says it's punishments because he spoke wrong. He misspoke. Rashi accepts that it was sin. He was wrong in saying they don't believe it. Ramban says he's perfectly right. It's exactly what happened. They stopped believing him as soon as Paro turned on them. So what was the purpose of the signs, according to that Mahal? Yes?
To like show Moshe that just as things have changed, doesn't mean it can't revert back.
And that when the people stop believing you,
they'll eventually believe you.
They'll show them the signs.
So like a pendulum swing.
You know what the problem is? Now this, even Ramban has to agree with the problem that Moshe did, together with Aaron, is that in the Pasuk, they showed the signs before they told them what God was told. It says they came to the people, showed them the signs, and told them what God expects to do. No, don't show them the signs yet! You played that card already!
It's also like giving the punchline for the joke.
Yes, because now when they turn on you, now you're going, no, God really did send us. God wouldn't have sent you if Paro objects. Paro never objected to Avram or Yaakov. Avimelech never had his way with Yitzchak. Avimelech didn't have his way with Abraham. We know stories of our patriarchs. If Paro stands up to you, that means that God didn't send you. He goes, let me prove to you that God sent me. Look at this stick. Look what I can do to it. Moshe, you did that for us already. Okay? Why did Moshe and Aaron jump the gun? Because they felt maybe unequal to the task of being accepted. Maybe they felt that they needed those signs to be accepted in the outset. They did believe in him first. But he used too many of his cards right away. Okay? Now, when Moshe does go to Paro the first time, before Paro turns him down, it says, "Va'achar ba'u Moshe ba'aharon v'yamru al Paro." What's missing? Close reading. What's missing there in the top line? Look at the top two lines there. You see. Okay, you both looking at it? Yes?
The
Zikne Yisrael, yes. Where are the Zikane? Now, Ibn Ezra is not a close reader of the text. Ibn Ezra claims that the Zikane were there. So why aren't they mentioned? Because God doesn't have to mention everything. The Zikane were there, it's just not as important. Okay? Rashi not only points out that the Zikane weren't there, he punishes them. Remember where that punishment came? You ever seen this, Rashi? That when Moshe went up, what?
Oh, yes.
At Har Sinai, yeah. Moshe and Parshas Mishpatim tells this kid, you stay down there. Okay. Famous Kasha on Rashi is, by that measure, why didn't Aaron get to go up with Moshe? He was with Moshe here. Whoever bakes the bread gets to eat it. Aaron baked the bread together with Moshe. You know why?
Also, I was going to say, according to the Midrash, that all the Zikane were killed, FAA also, and Aaron wasn't.
There are a few different Midrash about what happened to these Zikane. One said they died in Diego, one said they died in Taberah, in Parshat Baloska, and they were the Shokela. But there are different opinions about what happened to them. You might want to say that Aaron was responsible for finding the Zikane. So they're like his Talmidim. Moshe didn't know these Zikanim. Well, who do you think helped him find these Zikanim? Aaron. So if the Zikanim don't show up, so Aaron, they're ready. He's also not going to go up with him. Right? Let's look at the second example. This week's parasha. Aaron says, V'chopas lechem, v'sa'adu l'chem. Famous example of Amor ma'at v'aseh harbe, because when he comes out, he brings them the kitchen sink. But not the one thing he told them he's going to bring them. Now, explain to me why it's not a good answer to say that Avram just said, let me get you food. Avram said, let me get you bread, because look what it says in the pasuk. See the second example there?
Pot lechem.
Pot lechem is bread. Lechem by itself can sometimes mean food. Right, lechem yishayeh, we call it lechem, it's called ani lachmi, leishai. There's no bread on the yishayeh, it's meat. Right, so lechem can mean food. But not here, it says pas lechem. And when he comes out, he doesn't bring them bread. Yeah, what do you say?
I think that Rashi says that Sarah was Nida, because she just got her period back.
It's a major trouble. Rashi, you never say something like that. If it wasn't the major or the mother. For sure not. Right? It says, Chadal Yos Vesara Och Hanoshim. I mean, it says this is a very strange kind of thing. That they should be keeping the dinner with Tuma and Tara and these strangers. I often thought they were idolaters. But Rashi is up to the task of explaining that there's something missing here. Ibn Ezra, and in this case, Rashbam, they write, what are you talking about? Of course the bread is brought out. You don't have to mention the bread. The bread he brought out right away with some dip or something, with some olive oil or some peanuts. I mean, the food took some time, but when he brought out the food, the bread was already on the table. Okay. What's next? Also this discussion. Yoshev Abraham El Narog, Yakumu Yachtov El Be'er Shabbat. The Yesh of Avraham, the Be'er Sheva. What's missing?
Where's
Yitzchak? Where's Yitzchak? That's a good question, because Sarah was with Avraham. Why did he go down to the back to the Be'er Sheva? And then the very next pasuk is Sarah dies. Are you telling Sarah again? Huh? So this, that depends on how old Yitzchak is at the occasion. If he's 12, he's 13, there's 25 years before Sarah dies. If he's 37, like Rashi says. Yeah. Okay, where is Yitzchak? What happened to Yitzchak? And you know what? He's also very, very conspicuously missing at Sarah's funeral. What's with that? See, that's probably what gave rise to Rashi saying it's all conflated together. The death was caused by the Akedah. Okay. But anyway, a close reader notices where is Yitzchak, you know, this way. Okay, next. Bayomar, this is obvious. Bayomar Achiha V'Ima. Teshev ha-nara itonu yomim ha-osro. Achar til.
Where's the Tua?
Where's the Tua? Now, Rashi only tells you a part of the story. He does not tell you the whole medrash. I'm willing to wager that not one of you knows the full extent of what's written in Bereishis Rabbah of why the Tua had to die. You know?
I think so, maybe. I read Little Mishnah's a lot growing up.
What?
I read Little Mishnah's a lot growing up. Yeah. It's like my whole not background
was
pretty much
this was size. Not being that Little Mishnah's.
Okay, fine. So
no I, way.
I heard that he put poison in a lizard's food. And
Fine.
And then they just switched them. So that he was killed.
What appears in Gracious Rabbah is that Pesuel's name, very close to the word Sula, because he was the despicable man in the town who got the brides before they went to their husbands. And we did that for Me Too, the very first class with Noach and the Rabbi Yudin, who says that so the Suel, he said, well, if she's going to go to become the wife of that man, I'm kind of together for the night before she leaves. He wanted his own daughter, because there's no exceptions. The angel said, no way the wife of Yitzchak is going to be submitted to this before she goes. And the Sua died. It means that Rivka, you know, young Rivka went to Yitzchak in the morning. The father just died. Okay.
And what is even
But then she says, of course Pesuel was there. He was out playing backgammon with his friends. He wasn't interested. How does he know Baharaya? It said earlier in the Parsha, Vaya'an Lovan Pesuel. Vaya'an in singular, as if the only Lovan's talking. Pesuel's, let him do the talking. Pesuel was a non-person.
Yeah, when the online were doing it, I forgot who said it, reading that person, that, Lavan was more respected and kind of raised above his father.
Okay, so that's the thing he's listening to. Vayosha Bayomahu Esav Vadarko Seira. This is such a vintage Rashi. What Rashi does with this pasuk, understand, is what Rashi lives for, because it's so ingenious. And it covers a lot of Tanakh, and you can tingle when you get it. The Esav was with 400 men, and it just says that he went back to Seir. What about the 400 men? So Rashi says the 400 men were so disillusioned by Esav, and they wanted to learn more about what Yaakov had to offer. What happened to them? Well, they didn't stay with the program, but there's a war that David fights against Edom in Shmuel Bet, where it says, incredibly, 400 of them survived and fled. Where are the battles that tell us how many people survived and fled? That's Rashi telling us that the author of Shmuel Bet, incredibly,
who is not son in God, Shmuel Aleph is Shmuel, that the author of Shmuel Bet purposely put that into the story. It happened, it was 400, or approximately 400, in order to connect to Bereishis. Ah! Amazing. That's why I say it's vintage Rashi, because Rashi loves Nida Keneged Nida. He just loves to bring out that this is what the Canaanites did, this is what they deserve. Even if it's Moshe and Aaron, you didn't even know it was Moshe at the time. Okay. Now, I haven't really gotten into the whole essence of biblical parallelism, which follows. There's a page that says biblical parallelism here. I didn't have it. So what you can do now in the Beis Medrash is read these examples. Okay? Biblical parallelism, if you're a close reader, means that you see a pasuk like this. It says, "Vilo asil ka asher diber alein melech Mitzrayim." Vatechayena es hayiladim. Which is usually translated, "they let the boys live." But to a close reader, it can't mean that. Explain why. To a close reader, but "tzachayena esil adim" can't mean "they let the boys live," because...
Wouldn't it have been more passive, like, and they didn't let their kids die? Meaning "tzachayena" is a lot more active.
Yeah, they gave them life.
It's like they're sustaining
them. Like, well, But you see, because I have two statements in the pasuk. I have the resha and the seif. Right?
Oh, because that's not what he said to not to do.
Yeah, Paro said to kill the boys. And you see them kill them surreptitiously, choke them. He's, oh, look at that, the boys born dead. In other words, I wanted to practice genocide, but I don't want them to know about it yet. So, but if it says in the resha that they didn't listen to what Paro said, which was kill the boys, I already know that means they let them live. So, but "tzachayena siyaladim" must mean the safkot lehem mayim umazon, and they broke the pillow and they brought them. The Medrash is very rich with all kinds of things that these two women did for the boys. So, precisely because, and Nechama Leibowitz expresses it with the word klomar. Ibn Ezra, you know, understands klomar in many psukim, right? Yotzaris hashamayim. What do I mean by I'll stop up the heavens? Klomar, what I mean is, so to Rashi, the Tzaras HaShemayim can't mean they won't be rained. Right? The Tzaras HaShemayim, usually, if you ask anybody, stop someone in the Beis Medrash and say, what does the Tzaras HaShemayim mean? And they'll say, it won't be any rain. What else comes from the Shemayim? There won't be any equals, or what's that story? Okay. So, but it can't mean that. So what does Vyatsar and Sushamayim mean? The clouds, the wind. Because Vyatsar and Sushamayim means there won't be rain, then it means Vyatsar and Sushamayim, Lo Yamatar. Won't be rain, won't be rain. Now, Ibn Ezra, Radak, Rashbam, these guys said, what are you talking about? That's the way the Torah speaks. Rashi was such a stickler for this that even in Shira, he says, he explains different parts of Shira progression. Ad Yavorim Kho Hashem, Ad Yavorim Zuchanisa, Nachalarnam, or maybe the Yardim, or something like that. You know, it's not just parallelistic structures. It's not easy to do that already. Shnei goyim b'neich, shnei goyim b'neich yiparedu. The Torah speaks in prose. Is that what repetition does? Must every repeated form teach you something new?
close reader is going to often say yes. So the next four or five pages give you all kinds of examples. Let me prepare you for a chiddush. Okay? By the end of these examples, I want you to consider whether Rashi might have been influenced by Rashban. Right? Source number 18. Is it possible that Rashi was influenced by Rashban? And what I'd also like you to do is source number 5. You see it, source number 5? Look for some other versions of Rashi. See if you can get see what I wrote on the side? Rashi continues with a number of additional examples. Some versions of Rashi, and there are many different Rashis out there, some versions of Rashi have something like another 15 examples of biblical parallelism. Incredible. But some versions of Rashi say the chulei. So it may be some copyist added other examples. If it's originally Rashi, that's incredible. That means that Rashi might have agreed with Rashi. Remember, Rashbam says if my grandfather agreed to me that if he was younger, he would like to have to redo his perush. Maybe what he meant was his position regarding biblical parallelism. Look at the examples I give, especially regarding Rosh Chodesh and regarding the beginning of Sefer Yeshayahu. Okay? Be mechadesh some chidushim today, okay? It's a chidush worthy of an article. If you can prove that biblical parallelism, I've never written this article, but I would love for a student to do it. Write an article for the Bahamavasir maybe, that tries to show that maybe, just maybe, Rashbam was not exaggerating when he said that my grandfather would redo his perush to be more like mine, you know, and that he was referring to his position regarding biblical parallelism, as is becomes manifest through these sources I've played here. Okay?
Yes.
We'll talk about that on Thursday.
Yes.
Okay, everybody. Have a great day today.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Gitty.